Welcome to Rooster Radio, where we talk to interesting people doing amazing things. I'm Andrew Montesi with James Begley. Today we sit down for an action-packed hour with Michael Johnson, better known as the Mojo Master. Michael had a tough childhood. He struggled at school, academically and socially. He was told he'd never make it and was ultimately expelled for fighting, a response to years of bullying. He battled depression to the point of considering suicide. But there were a couple of key transition points that helped Michael completely shift his mindset and his life. Now, as the Mojo Master, he's committed to helping others do the same. Through events, online programs, mentoring, and coaching, Michael works with some of the world's top performers in their fields, along with everyday people. And not only is it fulfilling, it is highly profitable. On the back of 700% growth, Michael has had to quickly build a team to support his ventures. Michael shares his story along with a huge amount of insight around personal purpose and values, the truth about happiness and positivity, accepting the balance of good and bad in life, and much more. Enjoy our chat.
Mojo Master, welcome to our Rooster Radio.
Excellent. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming into our office. How would you describe our office?
Bare.
Yeah.
Yep. Like a startup, really.
I wouldn't say that we've followed a minimalist practice out of kind of a conscious effort, but, you know, it's getting there.
What do you think about James's diamonds on the wall with some scribbled words?
I like them. I was actually thinking that we should do that in the office as well.
Innovation.
Now, I'm going to start by reading whether it's a quote or some words that you've penned just to get our conversation going. And it goes like this. As I sat there, tears running down my face, kitchen knife in my hand, I wondered whether life would change or life would end. This is the question that started it all. We need to unpack that a little bit.
All right, awesome. Where do you want me to start?
Anywhere you like.
All right, look, well, my story, the quick part of my story, which is really the long, quick, but, well, I'll go for it and we'll see how we go. It really all started, I mean, I've always loved human behaviour. I've always loved figuring out how things work. I was one of those little kids who just always asked way too many questions. My uncle used to call me Yap Yap because he reckons I was like one of those little barking dogs that just yapped all the time. And it was just because I've always been very inquisitive. Which was a good and a bad thing. You know, I think when you put into a schooling system where it's just this is the way that it is, a kid like me doesn't really fit in that well. So I was always in trouble. I was always in shit for something. I think I spent more time outside of class just observing what happens than I did actually in class learning. And, you know, I came from a young family. My mum had me at 17 and my dad had me at 19. And I think there was a whole bunch of pressure there where my mum wanted me to succeed and things like that. And it put a lot of pressure on me, from my perception anyway, to do well at school. But, you know, after a while I was put into special classes and got told I had learning difficulties and really struggled at school. And I think I started to buy into a belief that I was pretty dumb and that I was stupid and all that sort of stuff. So I just started causing a bit of trouble and, you know, one thing led to another. And at 15, I was expelled from school for fighting. And, you know, I used to get picked on quite a lot as well. I had bright red hair, so I was a full-blown ranger and, you know, had freckles and I was a bit chubby as well. And, you know, that was my way of coping was just, you know, when I got picked on just to beat the shit out of someone. So, you know, it stopped the bullying for a little bit, but it didn't really help me doing too well at school. And when I got expelled, I just thought I'd get nowhere in life because everyone told me that, you know, you had to do well at school so that then you could go to university to get a good job. And then, you know, when you get a good job, then you make tons of money. And when you make tons of money, you buy a house and car and kids and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, I think I bought into that. And so at 15, you know, I'd been expelled from school and I just thought I don't really have any close friends. I'm always in trouble at home. You know, I felt like I didn't have a place in the world. So, you know, I thought about ending my own life and, luckily something just snapped inside my head and I thought, you know what, fuck it. I don't care what anyone thinks. And they were my exact words in my head was just fuck it. I don't care what anyone else thinks. I'm just going to do whatever's right for me. And, I ended up going back to school again, finished grade 12 and, became a diesel mechanic. And then something similar sort of happened, like another wake up call. And, I got a phone call one day when I think I was a second year apprentice. And my best mate's three-year-old niece was killed in a car accident. And I remember being at the funeral and watching this little white coffin going into the ground and just thinking, how the hell can life just be taken away like that? Like you're there one day and then the next day you're completely gone and, you know, she never had a chance to live and here was me bitching and complaining about my own life. And, you know, sometimes I think tragedy is that wake-up call where we actually have to assess what we're here for and what we're meant to do in life. And not only was it one of the worst days of my life, it was actually one of the greatest as well because it was the thing that woke me up. And I think sometimes death actually teaches us how to live. And, from there, I just started looking at the things that I really enjoyed in life, and I loved going to the gym. It was the only place that ever made me feel good about me. And so from there, I started studying after hours and realized that I was actually good at studying. I just wasn't good at studying in the normal conventional school system. And then from there, I guess I just kept growing and learning and became a personal trainer and, you know, helped heaps of clients. And, you know, I was probably one of the top in the industry for a while and did really, really well in that industry, and then worked at a medical center for 2 years and just kept studying. I studied kinesiology and nutritional medicine because I just wanted to keep learning more. And from there, I realized that most people know what to do in life. They just don't do it, which then led me down the mindset path. So that's sort of, yeah.
How common do you think that feeling of not fitting in and lack of purpose is with young people?
I don't really know. I mean, I guess I don't hang around enough young people these days, but I think that it's a fairly common pattern, but I think some people are happy following rules, and then there's just others who can't. And I'm one of those people that are just unemployable. Like, I'm probably the biggest shithead when it comes to being employed by someone, because I just like to do my own thing. And so I just don't really conform to following rules and things like that. And if I've got questions and people can't answer them, then I just have to keep searching in order to find those questions. You know, I've spent over the last probably 11 or 12 years, I've spent $1 million on study, just traveling around the world, finding the smartest people that I can possibly find. And I still do that just because I have this quest for knowledge. Like, I call it the truth, you know, the quest for the truth. And it's things that sit congruent with me at any point in time. But, you know, I think as Albert Einstein said, today's facts are tomorrow's fiction. So, you know, there's always something to learn.
What about, I mean, as a youngster going through those tough times, what were there any kind of, was there acknowledgement of mental health, wellness as a young person, looking after yourself in that regard?
Not really. What I've found, and I get to work with some of the highest achievers that, you know, I can probably find around the place at any point in time. You know, I work with some pretty crazy entrepreneurs who are doing some wild, wild stuff. You know, some of them are worth hundreds of millions of dollars and things like that. So, you know, fortunately I get to work with people like that who come to me because they want someone who they know can, who is also a high achiever and actually understands it and has gone through that shit as well. So I've been pretty fortunate to be able to do that. But what I do know is that from working with probably tens of thousands of people now is that everyone, I truly believe, has a purpose in life, and we all have a set of values that we need to live to. And pain and our mental health issues, I truly believe, come from not living our values and having superimposed values from either society or people around us, our mums, our dads, our parents and all that stuff. And then when we make decisions, it's not our voice in our head, it's someone else's voice that's telling us that we should do something. And normally the word should actually creates guilt. And anytime we feel guilt, it's just a superimposed value of someone else. So whether it's society or our family or people around us, and I think almost every person who's come to my event is living someone else's value system. You know, once they free themselves up, that voice inside their head, I mean, everybody has it, but it depends on the level that they have it, which causes I truly believe the clarity in life, or the, you know, those times at night when you can't go to sleep because you hate your job and you hate your life and you're working for money. But that's not what you were ever meant to do. It was someone else's superimposed values, where someone, when you're a kid or something happened, whether it's society or not, told you that you have to go to work in order to make money, and now you're working a job that you hate and now you hate your life because it's trying to kick you in the ass to get you back to doing what you're born to do.
Oh, but I was never taught about values as a young person in school. I was taught about right and wrong, but not values.
Totally. Mate, we're disrupting the whole entire mental health industry at the moment, and whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know, but it definitely needs a big fucking shake-up in this country. You know, I've disproven positive thinking so many times, it's ridiculous. And the more that we crave positive thinking, the more people are depressed and are unhappy, and suicide rates have gone up. If you have a look at the direct the growth of positive thinking, there's a direct correlation between mental health issues, because most people think that they're not happy all the time. Nothing in nature is supposed to be happy. You know, it's a philosophy that we've created as humans that say we need to be happy all the time, when the truth is that everything in nature grows. And we've stopped focusing on our own growth and our own development, and we've focused on happiness, and happiness actually creates misery, because there is no such thing as happiness all the time. You know, we go through everything. When you look at everything in the universe, right down from the micro scale up to the macro, everything in the universe is trying to balance itself out. So magnets are trying to create the opposite. Ions at a subatomic level are trying to balance each other out. That's what creates the attractions and repulsions. So everything's trying to create balance in the universe in some way, shape, or form. Humans have this philosophy that we need to be one-sided, where we have to be happy all the time, we need to be positive all the time. And what I've found is it's the craving of happiness that actually makes people unhappy. When you realize that you all go through times and stages, that the higher up you go, the lower down you go. So the more we crave positive thinking all the time and excitement and joy and all those positive emotions, the more we actually crash ourselves back down. And what I've found is that the place that balance exists is in inspiration and love.
Mm.
That when we do what we love, you take both the good and the bad, the right, the wrong, the challenge, the support, and all of those things, we take them together. You know, my business is a motherfucker every day. Like you can't, it is what it is, right? But I wouldn't do anything else. I love it. You know, it's like telling an athlete or you know, with people like, you know, obviously the Conor McGregor and the Mayweather fight. You know, if you tell Conor McGregor you're going to get hurt in the ring, do you think he gives a shit? Like that's what he gets in the ring for. Mm. And I think when you do what you love, you take both of that. And, you know, I was only talking recently to my sister and she's got two kids and she said, you know, I sort of don't really understand. I said, are your kids your dream? And she smiled and she said, yes. And I said, but are your kids your nightmare at the same time? She said, yes. And I said, that's because you love them. That's what balance is. It's when you take both the dream and the nightmare together. That's love. So when we love what we do, we'll take both. When we have a fantasy or a delusion that we create, we want one-sidedness where we want all positive or the dream without the nightmare at the same time. So we try to avoid the pain or we try to avoid the things that cause problems. And that's when, you know, we get heaps of people who come to our events and they say things like, you know, I just want life to be easy. And I'm like, that's what happens when you die, my friend. You know, like it's just every day you're going to have both comfort and discomfort. And to the level that you can balance those two out depends on the amount of joy or the amount of love that you have for what you do. You know, I think if you have a look at most people's lives who crave ease, they're the ones that actually create the most challenge in their own lives. It's the ones who create the most challenge that actually have the easiest life. You know, when I fly business class now, you know, overseas and so on, when you have a look at the people who normally fly business class, they're the people who work their asses off every day of the week and they wake up at 5 a.m. for fucking 20 years and they've woken up at 5 a.m. and worked until midnight every night. Their life's been that painful, but now they get to fly in business class and get looked after and things like that. But that's only just one area. You know, I think that when we understand that everything comes in a dualistic nature, you just take it as it is. But the key question is, what do you love? That's the key thing.
So just on that, I mean, what's your purpose? What are your values? And what are some questions that you ask people to begin their journey to discover their own purpose and values?
Oh, this is deep. Okay. So our values, what they are is they're a set of... I guess you could say they're a set of voids, things that we believe that in our own perception, because our whole reality is just a perception. You know, now more and more science is proving that there is no such thing as reality. Reality is an individual reality. There actually is no whole reality because our brain can only take in a certain amount of information. It's only a very small amount of information than what's actually out there. So when we look at our own reality and what we take on are normally based on our own individual values. The clarity that we have on our values determines how fulfilled we are in our own lives. So someone who's really unfulfilled, I can guarantee that they're not living their values. You know, I met people who are launching companies on the stock exchange who are, you know, trying to raise $400 million in an IPO and they're ready to kill themselves. You know, and you think that'd be the greatest day of their life when they're making all this money because society tells us that making money is supposed to make us happy. The thing is, though, that money only makes us more of what we are and who we are. So if we're miserable without money, we're just going to be more miserable with it. Most people don't understand that when they make it, and that's what makes them more miserable because it's like a relationship. It's an amplifier of emotions. So you put a person who's unhappy in a relationship, they just become more unhappy. You put someone who's unhappy and you give them a ton of money and they're more unhappy. You take someone who's irresponsible, like people who win cross lotto, they've got no fucking money in the first place and all of a sudden they win lotto and think that everything's going to be easy for them and all of a sudden they lose all their money and they lose everything that they've had before. Now, that doesn't always happen because some people realize that and they go and get the right advice and they try to get the knowledge in order to be able to handle the money. But anything that we can't handle in life gets taken away. So we have to be able to handle it, and that's why growth is important. And if you have a look in nature, it's a common thing amongst all living things is that you're either growing or you're dying. There is no stagnation. Anything that stagnates like water, algae grows in it, and so something grows over the top of something that's already dying. So coming back to values, when we have perceived values as a child, because it is a perception and it's your own individual perception, because if you talk to your parents, they'll tell you that it was never a void, but it's your void, not theirs. So as you grow up, there's things that you believe that you missed out on. So for me, when I was a young kid, you know, I grew up with parents who didn't make a lot of money at the time. They did save a lot and now they're doing okay. But when we were younger, I used to go to school and play basketball in like $20 Dunlop shoes, and all the kids used to pick on
me. The old KT26s. I don't think I got a brand pair of shoes till year nine.
Yeah, I didn't get a brand pair of shoes until I actually could afford them. And, you know, I got my first job when I was 13 to buy that brand pair of shoes. So for me, wealth creation became important in my adult life because as a young kid, I just never believed that I needed it. As a young kid, I believed that everyone else had money and I didn't. So that became a void. Knowledge is my highest value, knowledge and teaching, but that's because I believe that when I was a kid, the teachers that I had never believed in me. So now what I do is I believe in people. And in all honesty, I see everybody greater than the way that they are. Like someone will just talk to me and I'm already analysing what are their problems, what are their pains, and what's stopping them from getting to where their greatness is.
Reminds me a little bit of some of the Tony Robbins stuff, the relationship with your parents and those formative years, and he seems to come back to that a lot,
yep.
You know, in terms of some of the issues that then, you know, percolate up as people are older. Are there any kind of specific questions that you pose to people to get them thinking about this stuff? Like how do people become aware of their voids?
Okay, so, well, they're not so much the voids that you want to worry about. They were voids, perceived voids as a child, but as they become adults, it's more important to figure out where their values are at. Now, everyone lives their values whether they like it or not. It's just what they call self-sabotage is them just showing where their lower values are and they're making decisions based on their lower values, not their highest values. So what I normally ask, there's a whole bunch of different questions. And I think Dr. John D. Martini, who's a friend of mine, he's probably the global expert in this area. But in that, he asks a bunch of questions, which I really like. But it could be things like, what do you use your phone for? The three or four most common things that you use your phone for. If you have a look at your phone apps, they'll normally tell you what you actually love. So for me, it's business. There's heaps of stuff on there about, trading or wealth creation, business.
Monty's is Bitcoin at the moment.
Yeah, mine's. Yep. Yeah, Coinbase, Facebook, Instagram. Yeah. Oh, hang on, I've got to review myself.
Yep. So things like that. So probably connections are high value. You like being around people. So you have a lot of apps like social media apps and things like that that could be connections. So you might be a connection-driven person.
Hang on, this is actually pretty cool. What would your top three be?
My top three apps.
Like I'm just working out what mine would be.
If you swipe down.
Yeah. It's not like Pornhub or anything in there, is it? No, you want to just avoid that one.
Clear the history.
Coinbase, Instagram, Buffer, Messages.
So mine would be Facebook, Instagram, and the ABC news app. I love news.
What is it about the news though?
This sounds terrible, but it's for me, it's like an escape. I love escaping into what's going on around the world because it kind of removes me a little bit from my immediate moment.
You have a passion for general knowledge though.
Curious.
Like,
yeah.
You'd have him at a quiz night because he has the most surface level knowledge of the biggest variety of topics I've ever known.
News... So topical thing, like it's just interesting because you talk about it, it's like let's put this into like the now because I would agree. I think a value set for me is I am completely engaged in the world in that other cultures, where Australia fits in that, my own sense of what I want Australia to be, the way that I disagree what other countries are doing, politics. So I guess for me that stuff resonates.
Yep.
What would be your top three apps, do you think?
Oh, so mine are definitely, trading apps. Like if I open up my phone now, so I use social media a ton during the day. I can already tell you what my top three values are, but my highest value is teaching and learning. So a lot of my apps are about that. With social media, I'd use it to connect and to build a community because people are important and connection's important. That's my third highest value. But learning is my number one value. So if you have a look, I got Scientific American on there. That's probably the app that I can't wait until something happens on that and they update a new one every month. Emails or things like that for business. Yep. So, that's a high value of mine as well. Again, cryptocurrencies and trading and, I've got the gold prices and stuff like that pop up every morning.
So it's a good exercise, isn't it? Because it's actually saying your aspirational values or there's the things that you are sometimes, that's what you want to strive for. But I guess the app exercise is actually a reality. Yeah. Well, you know, you said your values are here and present right now.
Yeah.
Well, just open up your phone because that'll tell you what they are.
Yeah. So a lot of people do the stuff that's really unfulfilling for them on a daily basis because that's what they think they should be doing. But when they actually have a look at the things that most fulfill them in life and the things that when they get caught up in it, they can just spend hours and hours doing it. Like if you think about the things that you, and this is another question, what do you actually spend your time doing and which, what do you feel most fulfilled in? When you do those things, time will just go. So for me, you know, teaching, I always have the team down the back pointing at their watch saying, hurry up, because I just get lost in it. Mm. And so it could be the same as when you're reading the newspaper, you get lost in just reading the newspaper. Whereas if you've got to do something that's not a high value, you're always looking at your clock going, shit, how much longer is this going to take? Because you want to get away from that in order to go back and do the thing that you love. But there's heaps of questions, you know, what do you spend your time doing? What do you think about most commonly? What do you spend most of your time thinking about? What do you spend most of your time talking about? So when I go and catch up with my sister, her highest value is her family and her kids. So when I talk about what I'm doing in work and what I'm learning, she'll always relate that back to the kids and the way that the kids behave. When she tells me about the kids, I'm relating it back to human behavior in order to understand it so I can teach it. So always go back.
And I guess who we spend time with as well is another key element.
Mm, yep.
I'm interested, can you unpack for us the transition? So you've done it in a huge way. You gave us the story, the snapshot of your story and how you kind of, there was those key moments that helped you transition to where you are today. Because there'd be listeners out there who are hearing what you're saying, completely agreeing with it, but going, well, what's my first step? Where do I start?
Okay. There's probably lots of listeners or big pun that don't agree as well. You know, I think that's the cool thing about duality as well in the world is that the more people love you, the more people hate you as well. So it's always balancing yourself out. Okay, I think the first thing is really is admitting that you don't know what you don't know. You know, I think that the more you know, the more ignorant you become as well. And I've come to realize that the more that I know, the more ignorant I am because there's more shit that I don't know. But I think admitting to yourself that you don't know something and then going on a search to be able to find answers to that is something that's super important in any field, in anything that you do in life. One of the strong beliefs that I have is that the greatest gift that you can ever give yourself is to know who you are. And just most people don't know who they are because they don't think about it. You know, I have so many people who they say, oh, I wish my friends and I wish my family would come to one of your events and things like that. But they just don't want to change. They're stuck in what they do. You know, neuroscience is starting to show that the average person by the age of 32 has one new thought. I think it's something like every 4 days. So even though they're thinking, they have 90,000 thoughts a day, they're thinking the same shit they thought yesterday, which means they've got the same behaviors as the day before and the day before that. And so, you know, by the time someone's 30, 40, 50 years of age, they're so predictable in their habits, their behaviors, their thoughts, you know, what pisses them off, what makes them angry, all of that stuff, they're just predictable. And I'm sure there's people that you know that you don't call at 7 o'clock at night because you know that Home and Away's on, you know they'll be watching it and it annoys them because they're predictable. And you know, Conor McGregor, whether you love him or hate him, you know, one of his things that he always says is predictability is weakness. And I truly believe that our predictability is actually our weakness. That if someone can tell what you're doing 10 years down the track, it's because you haven't fucking changed. Nothing's changed, which means then you're still stuck in the same pains, the same patterns. And in life, if we don't grow, things only get worse in order to kick us in the ass to grow more. So that person's just created 10 years of pain and haven't changed. So I think the first thing is that someone has to admit that they don't have the answers because there are so many people out there who just think that they know everything and that's their mechanism to avoid judgment or that's their mechanism to avoid not being smart enough because some kid at school called them dumb or whatever it was. So they're trying to prove themselves to the world, but that's the thing that's fucking up their life because they don't have to prove anything to anyone else. You know, at nighttime, I have a philosophy that if I can go to bed at nighttime and I'm cool with myself, it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. But if I go to bed at nighttime and I've done everything right by everyone else and I hate myself for it, then I've got to deal with that because I don't live in my house. I live in this brain. So, you know, that's a voice that I have to deal with more than anyone else.
So to a degree, are you a little bit of just a professional ass kicker sometimes with your events that in some respects your events can be that moment where someone gets kicked in the ass to then unlock and begin the journey? Is that
totally
how it works?
I'm going to a meeting in a minute with, you know, one of the a sporting association. I won't mention it because nothing's been confirmed yet, but with a sporting association in Adelaide. You know, they spoke to me about it and they said, look, you know, with the stuff that we're given around mindset, it's fluffy. Sounds good, but we need someone who can come in and tear shit apart and tell people the fucking truth and kick them in the ass and make them think differently. And that's exactly what I do. You know, I believe that both challenge and support are two of the same things. You know, there's more and more stuff. I was only speaking a couple of weeks ago with one of the top child psychologist or child therapist who owns play therapy clinics all through the US. And her biggest issue that she has these days is that parents offer too much support to their kids and not enough challenge. Now, if you don't offer support to, if you don't start to challenge your kids, they'll be challenged externally. So they get picked on at school by the bully, or they start having issues. And, you know, that's where you start to end up with the 50-year-old that still is at home with their parents and can't do shit for themselves because they've just been oversupported and not challenged enough. Mm-hmm. So we need to have, I believe that true love is both a combination of support and challenge, that we both need a good ass kicking when we need it, and we both need support when we need it, but not when we think we need it. It's actually when we truly need it. And I've found that, you know, I think in an intimate relationship, when you're in love with someone, they will kick your ass when, probably not when you want it to be kicked, but when you need it to be kicked. And they're the times where you have arguments and shit, but that's when you go off and you start thinking about life a little bit differently and you start assessing things, you start asking questions. But also at the other time when you're really down and you're really, you know, you're really beat up, that person's always the one who's there to support you when you need it and you feel like you're the most alone. So
with all of this too, your commercial success, I believe, is inextricably linked with credibility and people's willingness to want to listen. I mean, that's just a fact of life. If you're successful, I believe, people are going to be drawn to you initially because of that.
Yeah.
What have been some of the commercial realities, and how, when was the moment that the key turned for you, when the tap started to turn on?
That's a few big questions there. I'll probably go off track again like all the other questions
and
avoid answering them. I need to come back and finish off about three or four questions, or else I'm going to get a heap of Facebook messages of people going, tell us your values.
Yeah.
So I think there's a few big things. I think that time is a key element, and I was only thinking this morning because I get messages from all these young dudes who are like 19, 20 years of age, and they're like, I'm not a fucking millionaire yet. What's going on? Like, my life's shit. You know, I hate my life. I hate myself. And I'm like, at 20, I was still trying to figure out how to put my pants on in the morning. Like, shit, just relax. You know, you've been 2 years out of school. You got, I mean, if you do what you love anyway, retirement is the most disgusting thing you can ever think of. Like, I called someone a couple of weeks ago, you know, someone who who's reasonably high profile, and they said to me, you know, I want to retire, and they're fairly young still, and but they've done really, really well commercially. And
Bernard Tomich, there you go. There's a scoop for Rooster Radio.
Yeah, done. All right, we'll just make up stuff.
That's what we do.
I'm going to get like lawyer's letters from his team now. You know, you name drop this guy who has no association or affiliation with you at all.
There's a bit of clickbait. Someone will pick that up.
Yeah.
Bernard Tomich to retire.
Done. Yeah.
Perfect. Sorry, I jumped in.
I've been trying to get in with the advertiser for ages. They won't pick up any of my stories now. I'll be front page. So I think, you know, time is something that's really important. And just going on to the retirement thing, you know, this guy was saying, I just think I've done what I have to do. I'm thinking about retirement. And I looked at him straight in the face and I said, you're a piece of shit. And he said, what do you mean? I said, you're a piece of shit. And I said, you want to retire? You're fucking giving up your life. What's with that? You know, if you have a look at statistics, they say that the average life expectancy after retirement is around 2 years. So you want to retire and die. That's really what you're doing. And the only reason why you retire is because you're trying to escape from something that you've hated for so long. When you do what you love, like, do you think that Warren Buffett's looking to retire? You know, I guarantee if you sat down and spoke to Warren Buffett, he couldn't think of anything more disgusting. You know, in his documentary, he said he skips to work every day. That's someone who loves what they do. And if you have a look at the greatest people in history who just live what they love, they're the people who couldn't think of anything more disgusting than retirement. And retirement's that thing that people have done when they've given up their values for a lifetime and they've worked for 40 years and they're just waiting for that day when they can go and live their values. But you know what? They're going to get to a point where they're going to realize that when they retire, their back hurts, they got no money, they're not doing anything that fulfills them anymore. And now they've got a whole bunch of other challenges that they've come up against. And that's what scared me. Also, you know, my grandpa, who was the strongest person in my life, passed away about 5 years ago. And he bought a caravan, and his goal was when he retired to go and travel around the country. And then he realized he had no money. Him, my grandmother, you know, their bodies were falling apart. They had health issues and all that stuff. And the caravan sat there for about 20 years and never moved. And, you know, when they passed away, that caravan was still in the same spot with flat tires and all that. Nothing ever happened. And that's what retirement does. So, you know, I think the thing that I do now is I just want to see people living an extraordinary life. But coming back to the question, I think when I started realizing that a big thing clicked to me. One of my best friends is a guy called Brad Smith, and he was a Global Young Entrepreneur of the Year, and he owns Bart Motorcycles. Very, very close friend of mine. Amazing, amazing guy. And, you know, he was at 26, he had six multi-million dollar companies. And, you know, I thought, wow, what an incredible guy. And, you know, he'd ring me up every week to check on me. And I was like 29 at the time. I'm thinking, God, I'm a piece of shit. Like, I haven't even made my first $1 million yet. What the hell is wrong with me? And every day that was going through my head. And it was because I was comparing my life journey to Brad's. And one day it clicked to me that I don't know what Brad's future holds. You know, he could have worked his whole life and hopefully this never happens. But, you know, he could wake up one day and realize that he's been doing something that he doesn't enjoy anymore and give it all up and go and live, you know, in a rainforest or something. You know, there are plenty of people who have made tons of money and ended up drug addicts and stuff like that. You just don't know what the future holds. So when we're comparing our past with someone else's past, that's probably one of the most stupid things that we can do because we don't know what the future holds. The only thing that we know is that our daily actions result to what happens tomorrow. So what we do today will lead to tomorrow. And what we do tomorrow, if we keep doing that, you know, if we keep doing something different, it will lead on a completely new path. When that clicked to me, I think I just stopped comparing myself to others, that everyone has their own journey. You know, I work with clients who are way, way financially more successful than I am, but I would never, ever give up what I do to live their life because they do what they do and I do what I do. And when I got to that point, I think these high achieving clients started coming to me because they realized that I was the best at what I do and they were the best at what they do. And there was never a comparison. I didn't pedestal them. I think anytime you put someone up on a pedestal and you think they're better than you, you put yourself down. Anytime you put yourself up on a pedestal, other people will put you down in order to balance you back out again.
But do you think initially people come to you because they believe you are more enlightened in these areas and they want to learn off you?
Oh, totally. I think, you know, results are very important. Like my purpose in life is to lead an extraordinary life and to teach others how to do the same. But no one else can live my life. You know, I say it at all my events. We run heaps of different coaching seminars. You know, we certify life coaches and I say, never become me. If you become me, I'll outperform you every day because you just can't beat me. But what you can do is you can beat yourself by doing the best that you can. And everyone has their own style of coaching. You know, I'm a pretty hard ass, straight down the line, no bullshit sort of guy. Whereas some people don't like that. We have people who avoid my events for that specific reason, but we have people who come to my events for that specific reason. So everyone has their own path and their own journey that they need to be on. And, you know, I think that you've got to walk the talk as well. And that's what I started doing was that when I started just working on myself, you know, I put more work into me than I do anyone else. And I think once I got my own head clear, that's the thing that actually helped. You know, I know that I get asked to speak at heaps of entrepreneurial events and all that sort of stuff. And I get asked all the time, you know, what led to your success? And I just tell them I got my head right. Once I got my head right and I realized that I'm not here to perform for anyone else, I'm just here to be the best version of myself every day. And some days I have a shit day and some days I have a great day, but it's a combination of all that stuff. You know, it's when life's going well, we become complacent. When life's turning to shit, that's when we start to think about things and we actually create growth. You know, I go to the gym, I love training. I go to the gym every day to lift heavy shit that hurts like hell. And the more I lift heavy stuff, the stronger I become and the better I can perform. Most people just don't think about that same analogy with their own mental health, is that the more you take on challenges, the more challenge that you have, the stronger you actually become mentally as well. And I think that that's a huge key.
This might be a boring question. Well, it is a boring question. How do you, in this world of, you know, there's a lot of gurus out there, there's a lot of people think that they're mentors, life coaches, all that sort of stuff. Understand when you first made a commitment to these values, how did you actually turn it into something tangible, provided a structure, some sort of commercial framework from that outset so you weren't just one of those other people talking about it, but you're actually, it's built on something? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. That's a really good question. I'm not that intelligent to figure that stuff out. So all I did was it was trial and error. You know, I just kept doing stuff and whatever didn't work, I just stopped it. Well, I remember years ago, when I left the medical center, I owned a business in a medical center called Rejuvenate Health and Fitness. And I used to do like a lot of rehab from doctors and the physios and stuff in the medical center. And I started working on mindset because I sort of saw that was a missing gap. And I started working with a psychologist in there and, you know, just figuring out some stuff. And what I found was that a lot of the time that people were coming with these problems and they would just get these quick fixes or these stupid answers that didn't work. And so I just wanted to find out more. Now, not saying that that's all people. I think in any industry, there's 10 to 20% of people who love what they do and they're the experts. So in any field that you go, I would just want to go and learn with the best 20%. You know, there's 20% of doctors out there who are amazing doctors and 80% of them are stuck in a job that they hate. And so they give shit advice, they give shit information, and that's nothing against the doctor profession. That's just across the board in any profession. You know, you go to the finance industry, you get 20% of people who love what they do and they just breathe it. And they couldn't think of anything better than talking about finance. And then you get 80% of people that can't wait to get home and drink, you know, a bottle of wine just to dull their misery of the shit that they've created in life, because now they've got a mortgage and cars and stuff that they need to pay for every day, put their kids through college, and now they're stuck. So in any industry, it's the same sort of thing. But what I realized was that there were so many people looking for answers, but they were getting answers in an impractical way, things that they couldn't implement. And so that led me down the path of starting to work with my own clients and just trying to figure it out. And also myself, when I'd learn something, one of the key things that I've always learned is that you've got to implement it. If you don't implement it, you can't congruently tell others that this works when it's never worked for you, because there's so much bullshit out there that, you know, the whole like overnight success thing that I think we spoke about before, the overnight success thing, if you talk to most people, it takes anywhere from 7 to 10 years to be an overnight success. It's just, it takes that long to get the media and all that sort of stuff and the hype behind it in order for you to become an overnight success. This, you know, the same as a great footy player at 17 that gets drafted, who's going to be the next greatest thing. That kid's been training since he was 4 years of age, and no one's ever even thought about that, but now he's an overnight success. So I just started looking at what people's patterns were. So I started writing down all the common problems that they had, and then I just linked that to solutions to those problems, and I just started testing them. When I launched products, so I remember spending 6 months working on a 10-week audio product. And I launched it into the market and we sold 10 copies at $250. Now for 6 months, that wasn't even worth it. So our first year of Mojo Master, I made $30,000. And then the second year I convinced my fiance to leave her corporate job to come and work for me. And we made $30,000. So you split that between two people, it's 15 grand. And so we were pretty much broke as shit. We could barely even live. But what I knew was that if we just keep going, we'll find a way. And I think that's why you've got to do what you love, because you take both the good and the bad. And now I look back at it, it's what an awesome journey, you know, when you make that shit of money and you still keep doing it. People ask me all the time, if you won Lotto, what would you do? I'd just do this at a greater level. That's when you know someone loves what they do.
What was the tipping point that took you from your 30 grand a year to the next level? And you're like, I get this now.
Okay. I think... it was just being congruent with myself. You know, I started, you did all the Tony Robbins events, and I went and learned all these different NLP techniques, and I was starting to work with some psychologists and stuff like that and figure some stuff out. And when I launched my business, I called it Ultimate Achiever, because I thought, you know, that sounds quite, you know, corporate-y. I'll get a nice job in the corporate market and I'll do some corporate speaking and I'll wear a suit and a tie every day. And I just remember going and doing this job, and I won't mention who it was because there's probably some listeners that work for them, but I remember walking into this organization and, you know, I did this ripping presentation. I was all pumped up and just nailed it. And this person put their hand up and they said, "So you're telling me that if I change my mindset that I can change my life?" And I went, "Yes." And then they rolled their eyes and I was like, "Fuck you guys. You know, here you are stuck and here I am who's loving life and you're telling me that it can't be done." And then it was like the room, there was probably 90% of people who were just zombies. You know, I almost needed someone with a machine gun just to make sure they didn't suck my brains out when I left. And so many corporate organizations are like that because they have a shitty culture. Most people there just to make money so that then they can spend all their money trying to escape or prove their self-worth by buying expensive shit that they can't afford, which then keeps them trapped in the job that they hate. You know, it's just a common pattern. And so, you know, I was just... after that, I thought, you know, this is just ridiculous. And then one day, and plus I hate wearing ties as well. And a friend of mine, one day I went to train with him and I'd spent all night working and I had chronic fatigue when I was 21. And the doctor said to me, you'll never get over your chronic fatigue. And in the back of my head, this little voice just went, "Fuck you, I'm going to find a way." And I just got on Google and I searched everybody, all the different ways of overcoming chronic fatigue. And I just started implementing them to find out what worked. I'd pulled an all-nighter working. This was a couple of years later. And I went to a mate's house and he said, "What have you been doing?" I said, "I've been up all night working." He said, "You're like this mojo dude. You just have this energy about you all the time." And I thought, "Mojo dude, I like that." And for about 3 days, this mojo dude just sat in the back of my mind. I was just thinking, how do I use that? There's something in that. And anyway, it clicked. And I ran into my fiance. She's a graphic designer and works in marketing worked in marketing. I ran into her office and I'm like, "We got to rebrand. We're rebranding as of today." And she said, "What do you mean?" I said, "It's the Mojo Master. We're the Mojo Master." So within a couple of days, we set up a Facebook page and got all that working and started driving traffic across into it. About 3 or 4 weeks later, I was at an event with Richard Branson in Melbourne, and we were at a friend of mine hired a nightclub out because Branson was supposed to be there and all that. And it was about 4 o'clock in the morning. I walked out and I was quite intoxicated. And this guy comes running down the road and he goes, Mojo Master, I follow you on Facebook, dude, you fucking rock." He gave me a hug and then hopped in a cab and took off. And it was actually Jack Murray from the Australian Coaching Institute, I think it is, that he runs or used to own, or Institute of Coaches or something. And so that's when I knew that the brand stuck. And since then, our branding is very funky. It's very different. We're different than the other corporate industry. You know, I do, at my events, I just say it how it is. We get a lot of Aussie guys who couldn't think of anything more disgusting than going to a personal development event, and they're all starting to come through now. We get people who just don't want the bullshit anymore. You know, the whole got to be happy, got to be positive, all that stuff all the time, because that's, I don't agree with that at all. You know, I think that life's a consistent journey and we have both ups and downs. We have good days, we have bad days. It's just how long does it take you to get out of that bad day? So for some people, it lasts 3, 4, 5, 6 years. They have that one bad day over and over again. It's not about getting rid of it. It's just if you've been in a bad space for 3 years, how do we make it a year? Then how do we bring it down to 6 months? And then how do we make it so that you're in that shitty spot for an hour? That's the thing. You know, I have days where I wake up and I'm just like, you know what? Fuck the world. I just want to rest. I need my space. I need my time. And that's normally where I've given too much of my energy to everybody else and I haven't focused on me. And I think everybody goes through that. And so I push people away. I have my space. And within a couple of hours, bang, I'm back on board again and I'm ready to rock and roll. And I think that when you teach people the truth, shit that they can relate to, they go, you know what? It's okay. It's acceptable to go through those stages. It's acceptable to feel depressed. It's acceptable to feel angry. It's acceptable to feel happy. And the more and more society's condemned what they classify as negative emotions, if you have a look, they've actually got worse. So every time we condemn the way that males behave, if they're more testosterone driven and they're more masculine in their energy, the more aggression we've found with king hits and things like that, because, you know, these days at school, boys can't even touch each other. You know, they're not allowed to play, fight and wrestle. You know, back in my days, that was something that I enjoy. I still have mates around, you have a few drinks and you get on the ground, you wrestle around with each other and, you know, give each other a bit of a nudge and things like that. These days, it's almost like it's completely unacceptable to do that thing that's natural. And I think it's, as humans, we've sort of tried to outsmart ourselves and that's creating an issue, but it's just creating more balance as well. So I think that it's eventually it'll get to a point where we'll balance it back out and we'll go back the opposite way again, where, you know, most people think that if you do the opposite of what's not working, it'll work, but it doesn't. Mm. There's a balance point between them. You know, if you go from a negative thinker to a positive thinker, they're both just as shit as each other. Because what I do know is that negative people normally express how they feel and on the inside, it makes them feel better. Positive people normally hide all the shit that they don't want to tell other people, which then makes them feel guilty and angry and frustrated on the inside. But then they smile and tell everyone that everything's okay and that they're always doing awesome, that everything's great. I see that stuff all the time. And it just makes them feel guilty and resent themselves. They feel like they're never good enough, never smart enough. And, you know, they beat themselves up on the inside. When you balance, you realize that you have both good and bad days. You just don't harp on it. You know, you can say, you know, I'm having a shitty day or I'm having a shitty moment. And it's all okay. You just don't get caught up in the story of it, which then leads you to getting stuck in it. Mm. So that sort of makes sense. Yeah, I don't know, even if I'm on track with that or whether you guys have blanked out or not yet.
With this discussion, I mean, there's obviously there's a few parts. There's your story.
Yep.
There's, I guess, your methodology and your philosophies about, you know, human behavior and in performance and accepting the world and improving.
Yep.
And then there's the business story as well. And all three all sort of work together.
Totally.
And that's why it's fascinating, because without one of them, you're probably not going to, you know, enhance the other two.
Yeah.
A snapshot of your business now. Yep. What are the things that you offer? What are the channels that you use?
Size of the business.
Size of the business. Okay. Bit of an overview.
I mean, we grew about 700% financially last year. I've slowed it down quite a lot because we just grew a bit too quick and the systems and the process and the structure weren't there. So I just hired a general manager and we've hired a few other people to start to ground everything. But we're doing well over seven figures now. So that's, you know, quite a good place to be in, but it's obviously more responsibilities as well. So I think the more money you make, the more responsibilities you have. And, you know, it doesn't really, I always love when I hear someone say that, you know, they wish they could make more money so they can do whatever they want, you know, however they want and all that sort of stuff. It never happens. It just, you just have more responsibilities. So what was the other question?
So, what's the Mojo Master business?
Okay. So what we are is we're really an education platform. We're an education business. We've got two different businesses. And the way that started happening was that we had the Mojo Master. I started off doing a bit of public speaking, a bit of corporate speaking. Now our events, you know, we get anywhere from 50 to maybe 170 people to our events. We run them a couple of times a year. And we offer public events. I've also got my private coaching, so I only take on 10 clients a year. You know, I charge good money for that as well, but I want to see them progress, and they're people that I believe are more growth-driven people that really want to make a difference. What I've found is that it's good working with people who are struggling and things like that, but a lot of the time they need to hear the same stuff over and over and over again to implement it. With people who are already kicking ass in life and who are high achievers, they normally just go and do whatever you tell them to do if they feel congruent with it anyway and they trust you, they'll just go and implement it. And so you can see big results happening really, really quickly. So I take on 10 clients a year who are normally at least 7, 8, 9 figure earners to work with those because I think they can have the biggest influence on others in an empowering way. And if I can teach them how to be empowered, then they actually walk the talk and lead by example. So that's what we offer now. With our events, with the Mojo Master events, it's really about just empowering yourself. You know, if you're going to live an extraordinary life, that's my life purpose is I want to live an extraordinary life and I want to teach other people how to do that as well. So we have a few different stages of that. Our first event is called Thrive Time, and that one is all about knowing yourself because I don't believe that if you don't know who you are, I can teach you how to kick ass with goals, but all you'll do is you'll just be another high achiever who gets a goal and then after 2 days, you're like, what's next? And so you spend 6 months working your ass off, hating your life, in misery, stressed out, frustrated, angry, hoping that the next goal is going to make you fulfilled. And then once you get it again, you're just going to do exactly the same shit that you've always been doing, hoping that it's going to be different. To me, that's a dumb strategy. What I want to do is help people feel fulfilled so that what they do every day is the thing that they love. And the goal is just showing them, you know, I just achieved a huge goal of mine. I just bought a car that I've wanted for a long, long time.
What is it?
I bought an R8. So it's a bright red R8.
Audi?
Yeah. Yep. And that one, I've had that as a dream as a kid that I've always wanted to own a supercar. And, you know, it wasn't the right time to buy it, but it wasn't really not the right time either. You know, when they come up and
you've just already answered one of my rapid fire questions.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Was that what car do you drive?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in all honesty, I actually drove around in a blue Hyundai Getz, which is my fiance's car. She bought that in 2003 and I was driving that up until about 3 weeks ago.
I thought you were going to say you bought that for her last year and then you bought yourself an Audi.
No. So I was driving that around for about 3 years because I made a commitment to myself that I would not buy another car that was a depreciating asset unless it was a car that I wanted. And then about 3 weeks ago, we just bought a Range Rover, which is, you know, a bit more of the company car sort of thing. And I thought, that's it. I'll just leave the supercar for a while. But this one came up online at the right price and I thought, fuck it, I'm going to go do it. So did that. But yeah, I've had heaps of people who sent me messages and they're like, you know, that's so sick. You must be so proud of yourself. And you know what? I'm not. It doesn't really make me any different as a person. The only thing it is it's a reminder of the person that I had to become in order to achieve that thing. That is it.
And you get to your appointment a little bit faster than what you previously did.
Yeah, maybe. maybe. Yeah. I don't know that I get to thrash it that quickly. But you know what I mean? Like, goals should just be a reminder of the person that you had to become in order to get that thing, not as a reward to go through all the pain and all the struggle and all the shit that you've had to go through in order to feel good for 5 minutes. It's just a ridiculous idea.
Who... some names of people that have been, you know, incredibly influential for you.
Oh, there's so many.
Top five.
I honestly couldn't do it.
You have to.
No, I couldn't do it because
okay, just five that come to your mind then.
Okay. There's so many great people. I'm driven by people. Anyone, I get inspired by so many of our attendees who attend our events because I've come from so much shit in the past where people have told them they're not good enough, they're not smart enough, they're, you know, not worthy. They've, you know, some of them have been homeless from young ages. Some of them have had the shit beaten out of them from a young kid. Some of them have gone through sexual abuse and things like that. You know, those sort of people, when they can come out on the other side and say, I'm better than this, and they have the courage to do something about it, they're the people who inspire me. Anyone with courage is the person who inspires me because it's easy to have dreams. Anyone can do that shit. It's what are you going to do about it? You know, they're the people that inspire me. And even just talking about it gives me, you know, tingles and things like that. But I mean, there are the celebrities and things like that, I think, that are more in the public eye who grab people's attention. But I'm inspired by anyone who's kicking ass in life and who's prepared to say, where I am today isn't where I want to be in 5 years, and I got the courage to go and do something about it. They're the people that inspire me. But I guess, you know, if I had to name a few, you know, Warren Buffett is someone who I really love his stuff, you know, just the way his philosophy on life. I think there's so many great people out there though. I'd sit and watch X Factor and just tear up all the time because I just love all the people getting up there who've gone through so much shit and they've got the balls to go and do something about it. You know, it's things like that. Sports people who go and do cool stuff as well. You know, I've been, because of the Conor McGregor fight and stuff like that. I mean, Conor McGregor's, I love some of his philosophies as well and the way that he works with his mental health.
And just on that, I mean, it is fascinating now. I mean, we look to our sports stars to become those inspirational guru beacons. Like, you know, people love Conor McGregor because of the self-improvement stuff, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, people love him, people hate him, just like anybody else. You know, there are people out there who love Donald Trump, and there are people out there who hate Donald Trump. There are people out there who, you know, who love certain athletes, but no matter what, you always find a good side and a dark side to anyone. Anyone who's got a light side always has a dark side. And that's the people, I think the people who try to hide more of their dark side are the ones who end up getting caught out. Everybody has a dark side. It's just how much are we prepared to hide that? Because it'll come out eventually, especially in this day and age with technology. Anyone can find out anything about you. So the more you try to hide, the more it'll be brought out. And the more pride we have, the more shame we'll have as well.
How do you structure your day? What are the key habits that you will do every day?
Okay. There's a few key habits, but I don't have structure. I hate structure. I'm not a structured person. That's why I have a team of people who are structured. I think for me, normally I wake up... I guess you could say I try to wake up early every day, but it also depends. I'm a bit more health conscious as well, and I know that I can burn myself out. So I sort of go to my body at night time before I go to bed, and if I need to sleep in the morning, I'll sleep in. Some days I start work at 10 o'clock. I actually work from home, so all of our staff come to our house and work from there. So we have, I think we've got like 4 or 5 rooms that are just all offices. I think for me, almost every day, the gym is something that's important to me. Health is a high value of mine, and exercise is. It has been for years. And I found that when I started traveling and I spent a lot of time on planes and a lot of times interstate and I stopped exercising, I actually started getting really fucked off with everybody. And I started pushing people away, and it was just me trying to get back to my values. So now I just, no matter what, I'll exercise almost every day or do some sort of movement or stretching or some sort of something just to move my body. Breakfast, I guess, is something that's important to me every day. I love a good breakfast.
What is it?
My breakfast? Don't know. It changes up all the time, whether it's a big bowl of fruit or a good old-fashioned eggs and bacon with, you know, chorizo and all of that sort of stuff. I don't mind that. A coffee is important every day. I think that gives me a bit of an energy kick. But they're probably my main habits. But like, I don't really have too much of
it. It's good to hear, because you do, like, a lot of, you know, people in this space, like, you know, they appear to have this full structure and, you know, like, I wake up at this time and I meditate for an hour and then I float in the clouds and then I get an hour massage.
yeah,
cryotherapy. No, it's good that you're not reliant on a structured routine to do what you do.
Yeah, I mean, I have a calendar that the team puts stuff in. I normally have a look at that the night before I go to bed, but I couldn't tell you what I'm doing tomorrow. I think I've got 2 clients booked in and that's it, and that's probably going to be my whole day. Maybe tomorrow night I'll work until late, but sometimes I work until 1 o'clock in the morning and then I'll wake back up at 5 o'clock and I'll do that for a couple of days, and then other times I'll sleep in until 10 o'clock and, you know, go to bed at 8 o'clock that night and just watch a bit of, you know, TV. And I used to be really, really crazy where, you know, the same sort of thing where I'd hear all these people talk about how, you know, you need to wake up at 5 a.m. every morning and meditate and all that. Every time I did that, it got like 2 or 3 days and then I'd just self-sabotage it and I'd sleep in. I'd just go, you know, this is all pissing me off again. And I'd just get frustrated with myself. So these days I'm a lot more just in flow with who I am. I don't like structure. You know, you come to one of my events, you can come to the same event and you'll never hear the same content twice in exactly the same order. That's why I stopped doing corporate speaking. I mean, I do a bit of it, but I prefer to go in and speak to a company and say, look, what do you guys want? What do you guys need? And I'll structure that in a way that's going to give you the best content on the day. But normally that might be 5 or 6 key topics that I'm going to hit on. And then I just let myself run wild because I find I work best that way. I've got some mates who are corporate speakers and they can almost say the same 90-minute presentation word for word over 90 minutes. I would shoot myself after 10 minutes, after doing that for 10 times. I just couldn't do it anymore. I'd hate my life. I just don't like structure.
Do you still have mates where you might argue or kind of, you know, robustly debate this, follow your dream and understand who you are and do some stuff that you love versus, oh, come on, Mojo Masters, real world and you got to go to work and what I'm doing is what you have to do?
No, not really. I don't really debate with too many people about this sort of stuff anymore. I don't really care what anyone else thinks. Either you got the results or you don't. I'm results driven. You know, I have heaps of people that go, what are your qualifications? How can you teach this stuff? Very rarely does that happen because I think these days, the more intelligent you are, the more you realize that a qualification is just someone else's way of thinking. That's all that it is. Now, there are certain things that we need qualifications for, and I can completely understand that, but the best in any field are ones who can think for themselves. And, you know, these days we can find anything online. You know, I think you can do better research online than going and learning someone else's methodology of learning. And originally everything that now is an education system was never an education system. It's just one day someone else said, hey, let's set it up as a system. And that's how it was created. What makes them right? What makes them wrong? So for me, you know, I don't really get in debates with people. Either they have the results or they don't. If they have the results, I want to learn from them. I'm happy to discuss things with them and exchange ideas and things like that. But if it's someone who's just doesn't want to change and they're happy being stuck with their own philosophies and things like that, it doesn't really bother me, because if not, you just waste your time, you waste your energy. I much prefer to work with someone who's empowered to do something cool with their life than sit there and argue with someone for, you know, weeks and days, because all you end up doing is getting pissed off, and then your mind gets caught up with that for the next month when you're angry at that person. And in your mind, you wake up in the morning and you're thinking about that person. You go to bed at night, you're thinking about that person. I just don't even worry about it. You know, if they want to do their own thing, they go do their own thing. I just want to go do my own thing. You know, I have a bit of a philosophy, probably another one. And it's just, look, I just want to wake up in the morning, do what I love and go to bed. If people want to come on that journey with me, then they can. But if you stand in front of me and you try and stop me from doing that, expect to get a throat punch, because that's the thing that I hate. If someone tries to do that, that's when the prick in me comes out. But other than that, I just want to do my own thing. Like, I just love helping people to do extraordinary shit, whatever that is, whether it's be a great mum, whether it's be a great business leader. But I think these days is there's a lot of people out there who try to be everything to everybody. So they want to be an amazing mum. They want to be the best mum. They want to have a sports model body. They want to have the biggest Instagram account, but they also want to be an entrepreneur. And it all takes up time. What's your focus? Like, what are you really going to focus on? Like, it's cool to do that. I used to want to have, you know, six pack and be ripped all the time and all that. But you've got to be super dedicated to be like that all the time. I look after my health, but that's not my commitment in life. My commitment is helping people live an extraordinary life. That's what I'm committed to.
Rethinking education is this common theme that emerges from what you've been talking about. What's next in that regard for you?
As in my continued learning?
In terms of how, not you personally, but how you're rethinking what you deliver from an education perspective.
Okay.
And I'm trying to prompt you because you mentioned about the university thing.
Just ask. Come on, man. Just ask what you're really asking.
You mentioned you got your own idea for a university. Tell us about
it. Okay. Look, I don't want to create too much controversy on the show, but I think
No, that's what you want.
Okay. Look, I think
we really have to twist your arm there, didn't we?
I think there's parts that you've got. There's a heavy pseudo-spiritual sort of thing that's going on in our society at the moment, where there's a bunch of people that just want to go and sit on clouds and meditate all day and completely void any responsibility of their daily actions. And I see that happening a bit in our industry. Then there's the super pseudo-scientific people as well that don't want to, anytime you mention anything to do with any word that's related to a spiritual form, they want to try to avoid using that in context. And I think that they're both holding back our progression as a you know, human, I guess you could call it a human race or whatever. I think there needs to be a bridging gap between them. And I think when you balance, you can actually see the bridging between them. And if you have a look at a lot of the greatest scientists in histories, you know, people like Isaac Newton wrote more on metaphysics than he did on science. But most of the scientific community talk about how great he was as a scientist and as the same as Einstein. You know, Einstein was right into his metaphysics, but they just never spoke about it because it's sort of condemned in our universities and so on. I want to bring together a university that's happy to explore both of those two sides, that want to bridge that gap and bring things together. Whether we can do it, I don't really know. I don't know if we can do it in our lifetime, but I think that there's a huge gap there that's missing. And I know that there are definitely scientists out there who are bridging that gap, but I think that it can be done in a better way. So, you know, my goal is by the time I've left this place, you know, I want to start up our own research institute where we can research that stuff and put good funding behind it. That's not trying to sell a product, but it's actually trying to get to some sort of a bridge of what's really out there, the truth behind what's really out there. And I think that's what drives a lot of people to our events, is that, you know, we're not, I'm very scientific background, but I'm also, there's part of me as well that there's bits of that are also missing as well. And I think there's so much more that we don't understand. And I think that's why we have things like, you have quantum theory and then quantum mechanics. Normally the quantum theorists are the bit of a crazy, quacky ones, but they're the ones who actually drive the quantum mechanics people to actually figure shit out. If it wasn't for their crazy theories, then there wouldn't be the quantum mechanics or you know, the mathematicians trying to figure out that stuff. So I think we need a bit of both. And that's really the path that I want to go down, is start to bring some more of that stuff together. And to work with some of the smartest people in the world, you know, I just want to keep learning from people who are way more intelligent.
So it's a pretty good start.
I am.
We could go on forever, but I'm just conscious of time. So
the man's got an appointment.
He does.
Oh, that's right.
The Audi needs to be moved from the valet parking.
No, I haven't got it yet. It's going to rock up in a couple of weeks. So it's plus I definitely wouldn't drive that and put it in the public car park.
If they were going to see you post a picture, what's your Instagram handle or what's your Facebook?
So my Facebook is at it's the Mojo Master Coach on Facebook. You can add me as a friend as well. It's just the Mojo Master. That'll be my personal thing. I don't really care. My personal is the same as my business. It's the same sort of thing. I think a lot of people who come to my events like that as well. Like a lot of the people who come and hang out at our house now, we have big barbecues and things like that. There are a lot of our past participants. I like one of the things, a philosophy that I have in business is that I only do business with friends. If you treat me like a business, I'll treat you like a business, and that's not where we want to go. So I just want to do business with friends. I like the community that we have. I like being around cool people doing cool
it's
shit.
It's definitely a trait. We've talked about it before, Monty, is that from people that I've seen, their work world, they're truly successful with their work world and their personal world just merge by the time they become elite at what they do.
Yeah.
There's just not much difference between what they do socially, what they do from a downtime and what they do from a business. It's all kind of one pot.
Totally. You can't escape your values. Mm. You know, people ask me, what do you do when you're on holidays? And I go, I just work in a different location. That's about it. It's the same shit. You know, I wake up, I work, I go to bed.
Yeah.
Have we commenced rapid fire?
You know that I open rapid fire. Oh, so okay. you'll know when that happens.
I'm just waiting for you.
I've still got some plugs to go. I think Instagram. I'm just checking my Instagram account, but you can type in the mo.
Is this because you normally have one of your entourage whisper in your ear what your Instagram handle is?
No, I just get too excited when I'm talking because I just want to keep talking, keep educating. Yeah. So I lose the plot.
And we'll put whatever link you want. I'll put it in the description as well.
Okay, cool. So I mean, on Instagram, it's just Mojo_Master, and then I think on Snapchat as well. If you want to follow my daily antics and all the stupid crap that I get up to, or just me drinking coffee on a daily basis at different cafes around the place. I think that's just the Mojo Master as well on Instagram. I'm just trying to have a look. If not, just follow me on Facebook. That's really the easiest because I post all the other links on there.
So that opens up my first question of rapid fire, which may or may not have anything to do with what we've just talked about. The cheesiest person I follow on Instagram is probably like an Emrata or you know, like I shouldn't really follow them, but I do. Who's the cheesiest person on Instagram that you follow?
I don't really know because I post stuff on there, but I don't really spend a lot of time. My team put a lot of posts up on there. I'll engage with people if they ask me questions, but I don't really spend a lot of time on there.
So you don't follow?
I do. I've got heaps of people that I follow, but I don't really spend heaps of time looking at it. You know, I just post what I have to post, and if there's any questions, I'll answer them, or if people comment, I'll go back and I'll reply to them. I always reply to my own stuff on all my social media, but I don't really, I don't really have anyone
Monty,
cheesy
yours?
That I follow. I can have a quick look.
Cheesy that I follow...
Although there's actually, I think his name's Cullen Van Monger, who is a bodybuilder, and he's a big dude from I think he's from Geelong in Victoria, and he sort of reminds me a little bit of Arnie. So he's moved over to the States and he's a bodybuilder. And I'm pretty sure he's won Mr. Universe a couple of times
or whatever that's what he does.
Yeah, and his stuff's pretty cool. You know, he does like crazy shit on motorbikes, and then you know one day he'll be doing backflips off of a bridge into a water lake, and then he's feeding his lizards, and he's just got cool stuff that he just posts. I like that stuff where it's a bit different.
My
feed's pretty
probably
boring.
The cheesiest.
You know, like everyone does, but I'm really loving Gary V's work lately. Like it's just, even though like what he says, like it can be, of course, it's obvious, but it's just so I just love the way he delivers it.
You consume it.
Yeah. Can't get enough of it, really. Oh, my question. I had the question.
Oh,
now you've distracted me with your Instagram.
This is classic.
No. Okay. My question is, the one vice that you have that is perhaps counter to everything that you talk about, it's this one thing that you either got to check yourself on, you can't justify, it doesn't fit.
You mean
with
like the stupid car purchase that I just got?
Or maybe that. Yeah.
I don't know. I just talk about people living their own life. And for me, I normally do the things that are what I like. I mean,
so
I like
you don't have advice. Come on, mate.
No, I do, but I talk about that sort of stuff. So it's not hidden. You know, I love buying nice clothes and things like that. So I spend a bit of money on that stuff, but I'm very structured with my finances as well. So I don't spend money that I don't have on things that I can't afford. I never waste money on shit like that. Cars, you know, I guess I've always loved cars. My dad builds custom cars as a hobby, so he's built some pretty crazy out there cars. Like he's just sold one of he bought an EH Holden that was a four-door and turned into a two-door with Lamborghini doors and all that sort of stuff on it. So that was pretty insane. So I've always been around cars. But I think that I guess if you just follow me on Facebook, to me it's just the same shit that I do every day. You know, like some days I'll go out and shoot hoops, basketball, like that sort of stuff, not that I've done in a while. I grew up water skiing and wakeboarding, so I don't mind doing that every now and again. But there's nothing really that, I don't know, that's that crazy. I mean, I'm down a whole pizza every now and again.
That's sort of radical. Things. That's I do catch the odd Kardashian episode on the plane, Monty.
Oh,
that's mine.
If we're going down that path, then I do actually have the whole series of Geordie Shore.
That's cheesy.
That's horrible.
The one of your favourite city that you've gone to for whatever purpose?
No, I think every place has its own little perks and its own things that are just shit about that city. But I love always coming back to Adelaide. You know, I like it. I don't get stuck in traffic. I think Adelaide's a great place as well because, you know, I live at Semaphore, so it's only, well, like 10 minutes, 15 minutes to the airport. It's 35 minutes to the city. You know, the cafes down there are wicked. I love Adelaide. Yeah, great pubs.
Admiral.
Food. All of that sort of stuff. I love Adelaide, but I think that you need to get out of Adelaide as well to go and explore. And fortunately enough, I'm lucky enough to do that. I was speaking to a friend this morning who, I don't know if you've had him on the show and I won't name drop anyone, but he's a young entrepreneur in Adelaide as well who's doing some pretty cool stuff and he's been a good mate of mine and we sort of started around the same sort of time frame. And, you know, he's doing some cool stuff and we were just chatting about it and I said, mate, it just sounds like you need to get out of Adelaide again and just go and explore a little bit and come back here and you'll appreciate what's here, but you also need to go get out of here because if not, it can just be a grounding shithole as well where nothing much happens fast. So I think if you bring that fast-paced attitude back to Adelaide, you do really, really well, but you have to have that global sort of
mindset,
that global mindset. If not, you just get stuck in the Adelaide thing where nothing much happens and you just become really slow and dull.
Do you have Spotify on your phone?
I sure do.
Open it up. Tell me what's the last song that you played?
It was. It's probably like the Geordie Shore soundtrack. No, it's definitely not that. I don't know. I've been getting. I love dance music and things like that. But I listen. Music's a high value of mine, so it's in my top 10. So I listen to a whole bunch of things from like you know the 1950s to 1960s, from Chuck Berry, right through to Metallica. Then you know I think today on the way in I was listening to Deep House and Deep Party.
Rachel.
That's a regular.
Who works at
the top.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, very good. It's
love some beats.
Deep House. Yeah, that's one of our regular playlists in the office, actually.
Coup d'Etat is a good one as well. I love listening to Coup d'Etat and their,
very good.
Their stuff.
Good
my last question would be along the lines of another purchase that you've got in the back of your mind that you love to build up and buy.
The thing that we're looking at the moment is just a house where we've been renting. I haven't bought a house yet. And it's just, you know, I've got philosophies about investing and things like that. So I've just put money elsewhere and that's been doing well, but I'm maybe hoping that the market might swing. And the house that we're in at the moment is just a beautiful house and it's quite a big block and, you know, all of our staff can work out of it still. So, you know, I'd love to purchase that in the next 12 months or so, but I just got to negotiate a price because they're a bit too crazy at the moment. It was the house that I think that they wanted as a family house and they built it up and then got a job interstate. And so they still sort of held on to the idea that they don't really want to sell it for what it's worth. They want to sell it for what they, you know, what it's worth emotionally. So we'll just wait and hang in there.
Mojo Master, thank you for coming on to our podcast and giving us some energy and you know, allowing us to see someone who's clearly at the top of their game but also continuously trying to get better. So really appreciate it, mate.
Thank you very much. And I guess if anyone's out there as well and wants to drop me a message, they're welcome to on social media as well. Just jump on there and say hello.
And also you've got your own podcast.
Yeah, they can check out the podcast. I actually haven't done a podcast in about a year and a half and I don't know why, but my team actually before I left said, you got to start doing some more podcasts as well. And I went, we'll see.
Hopefully this is a catalyst. So check it out. Thanks.
I'll have you guys on. Excellent. Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening to our chat with the Mojo Master, Michael Johnson. Connect with him via the links in the description of this episode. We have plenty of interesting interviews in the bank and many more to come. So subscribe to Rooster Radio, and if you like what we're doing, please leave us a review in iTunes. And connect with us at roosterradio.biz. We'd love to hear from you.